You are listening to a sermon by John Clausen, recorded on Sunday, December 6th at Point Grey Intermennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
Thank you. So in deference to our cumulative brains here, I read that the most important thing the brain does is to create our memory and to consult that memory. So I'm going to be dependent on the paper, though, to remind me of what I want to say. So first of all, the passages that were read fundamentally support the thrust of what I want to be saying, that human beings create violence that's quite horrible. And but I'll start with a positive story about the Christians, and that's about there were two pandemics, not pandemics, but there were two plagues in the Roman Empire at the very beginning of the new era, and in second and third centuries, actually, so it's not the very beginning. In the second century, the Roman Empire found itself in the midst of two plagues, and the Christians of this empire went to work, or they saw the need that people were sick, people were helpless, people were hungry, and so they went to work and willingly took care of the sick with food and water. They had a very rudimentary church organization at that time, but they made that work for them. The first plague was in the second century AD. And at that time, the Christians were about 7% of the population. At the end of the empire, the end of the third century, they were the largest religious group in the Roman Empire. The people of Rome had responded in great gratitude to what the Christians had done to them. And they said, I want to be a good person like the Christians are. So it was that kind of thing. The message that carried so much sway was simply that caring for other people. Now that's quite a switch from what we're going to after this. And that is the 30 Years' War in the 17th century, but 1618 to 1648. The war was fought because two Christian factions struggled or argued over the Bible's teaching on salvation. And the power struggle in Europe in this time is that the Czechs are actually in a very strong, fairly strong position. They're a little country in Central Europe. And they were ruled by the Habsburgs, who were a powerful clan. But the Czechs didn't like the Habsburgs, so they have a tradition. When they don't like the ruler, they take him up to the top of the main castle in the city. And around this castle is, of course, a moat. And they took this leader and just tossed him through the window, and he landed down in the mud. That was their sign that we don't want you, we're going to rule ourselves. However, the Habsburg had an army, and so they came back, and that's what started this whole 30 Years' War. Most of the Protestants took the Czech side, and so it became a religious war for that reason. They were horrible wars, and I'll just read one or two portions that was written, but were written by historians of the time. This is the sack of the Magdeburg. Since we did not regard him as our enemy, that is the opposite, the other party, or the leader of the other army, since we did not regard him as our enemy, and since we had not been warned, we had nothing hidden. We kept all our property, all our horses and everything on our farms. But the Habsburg army, however, didn't recognize that more peaceful stance and said, you made your property open to us, we'll take it. So that was really the first one. They weren't ready, and so that was taken from them. Well, the next battle was much more decisive. Once the Habsburgs had established their power, they attacked the towns and the cities. They attacked women and children, and they killed women and children, and they killed men. They, once you had won the war, you did all the killing you wanted to. Well, that was not a very good scene for the presence of, let's say, well, for love to conquer, and for kindness. There was a news piece from the New York Times a couple of weeks ago discussing our own advocate of kindness, Bonnie Henry, who has been asking us to be kind to one another through these years. So the New York Times took notice of that, and it was a very powerful article pointing out how lucky Canadians, especially Canadians from Vancouver, were to have a person like that there. So it's on kindness that I want to focus a little bit. The absence of kindness is clear during the 30 Years' War. There's very little room for kindness. As soon as you were kind, you would probably get killed. But eventually, sign of kindness that, or the opportunities for kindness that the Christians in Rome showed, and that are also then visible or available during the 30 Years' War. When the war finally ended, I've asked Alice to read a description of what it was like for people when the 30 Years' War stopped.
So this is a prayer at a Thanksgiving feast in Ulm on St. Bartholomew's Day in 1650. And it was, the prayer was made by a cobbler. His name was Hans Haberle. We thank you, dear Lord, that you have given us peace after years of suffering, turmoil, and war, and that you have granted us our pleas. O Lord, you have indeed treated us with mercy that our city and lands, which had previously been full of fear and horror, are now full of joy and happiness. We beseech you, who has saved us from the sword, to mercifully let our corn grow again, that we may multiply and prosper once more, that we may live securely. Rebuild, dear Lord, a fig tree and a vine stock in each of us, that our destroyed and torn down dwellings may again be built up, and the ravaged land may be plowed once more, in order that all people should know that you are the Lord who has rebuilt what was destroyed and replanted what was ravaged. O God, the lover of peace, grant us henceforth permanent peace, and leave our boundaries and houses in calm and peace, that the voice of the war messenger does not frighten us, and that the man of war does not touch us.
It's very easily understandable why that kind of a prayer was made. So much gratitude for a world of peace that had suffered these wars. What had also happened during these years is that a lot of people began to think about how could it be better? What kind of society do we want? How do we make a place for the presence of kindness? Is there a door? Is there an opening for kindness if kindness wants to be there? I'm sure you've heard of the Enlightenment, the late 18th century, mostly an intellectual movement. And it was picked up by it was picked up by a lot of people, but eventually at the end we called them the people of the Enlightenment. And one of them is Voltaire. He had consistently attacked, he's from France, of course, he had not in the war, but he had consistently attacked the Catholic Church during those 30 years. Voltaire also advocated freedom of religion, freedom of expression, separation of church and state, and condemned the practice of war. When he's writing this, he stops and he makes an exception for a group of people called the Anabaptists who don't go to war. And you can see even in that time then that this was acknowledged. So Voltaire and people like him advocated human rights, advocated freedom, and advocated peace, of course. The person I want to pick out as one of the leading advocates of this particular government was a man called, well, it was Joseph II. He was the mother of Maria Theresa, who is the queen of the Habsburgs, that is specifically of Austria, but also Prague was again under the Habsburg rule. So she is a very powerful woman, very influential, and he loves his mother, but he doesn't like any of her ideas. So they're always working back and forth, and she has put him into the government with herself. But they're never the same. But when she dies, he proceeds. First of all, he knew that he had to lessen the power of the Catholic Church. He is very much a loyal Catholic himself, but he has to lessen the power of the Catholic Church because it's got over a third of the property in Austria, very, very wealthy, very, very powerful. The Jesuits are among the favored Catholics, and he realizes that he's got to curtail their power. So that's what he starts to do. There was one monastery, particularly in southern Austria, tremendously large piece of land, and he just took it away from them. He could do that because it had been a gift to them in the first place. So he took it back, the government took it back. And he used that money then to finance the reforms that he brought in. He continued to call himself a defender of the Catholic Church, but he thought of himself as the true Catholic in the group. So he was committed to changing the Habsburg government. And a large part of the regime was to make life for the peasants more pleasant. And again, setting the stage for how kindness can function if there are these possibilities. And it was this kindness for the people that burned in Joseph's heart to bring change. So he curtailed the power and the property of the monasteries and also some of the nobility, and used the money to bring in the reforms. He curbed the privileges of the church. He confiscated large estates. He allowed freedom of religion, and his mother didn't like that. But he didn't want to have the Protestants to be equal to Catholics. He didn't want to give them full rights, but he did stop punishing them. Under Maria Theresa, Protestants who were too loud or noisy were put on boats to propel the boats down the Danube River to markets further south, or east and south. And so any Protestant was caught being a Protestant, doing things that Protestants do, they would be put on that boat to row those boats down the river. Well, he ended that practice, but he didn't. And he was very sympathetic to them. But and also, I should say, he was being troubled by a lot of the Protestants who had. There were rumors that the Protestants would be made free again after all before the Habsburgs took over the Bohemia, which is part of the Holy Roman Empire. Bohemia was a Hussite regime. And so, but they had to go underground when the persecution came. And so they were starting to come out because things seemed to be getting better. And also the Prussia, a kind of a friend of Joseph, Frederick II, friend of Joseph, he enticed the Protestants in Bohemia and Moravia to just come out and be openly Protestants. So that caused a lot of trouble. But basically with his mother gone, Joseph was able to make a peace. He allowed Calvinists and Lutherans to build their own churches, but they weren't allowed steeples or any front access to the streets. They were supposed to be very mute, but he did give them the right to have these churches. So it was just those two churches though. But then he added one line to it again, and he said, but there's an Anabaptist Mennonite group in Eastern Bohemia, and they can have freedom too. So the Mennonists get a break again. Oh yeah, the last big thrust that I want to talk about in terms of the Enlightenment is that they were, of course, the Enlightenment ideas were what drove the French Revolution, drove the American Revolution, drove British, English government development. And again, that was part of the contribution then that these people, the enlightened, so-called enlightened people, did for society, especially for the Europeans. I'll stop at that.